It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast. Thanks for tuning in to It's Going Down. Today we're talking with two members of the Little Village Solidarity Network based out of Chicago, Illinois. Let's get into it.
I'm Cura. I organize with La Red de Solidaridad de La Villita in Chicago.
And my name is Lynn, and I'm also part of Little Village Solidarity Network.
So let's talk about broadly what the Heartland Alliance is and how does it operate where you're all living?
Yeah, Heartland Alliance was once a very big conglomerate, five different branches. And luckily they have lost a couple contracts. And now with, unfortunately, the COVID-19 horrifying pandemic, we're still waiting to see what the next corner that they're turning will be.
It's an organization that seems to be changing constantly. Just to give a little bit of background, Heartland Alliance is a nonprofit organization based here in Chicago that, like Pura said, has a number of different contracts and divisions, one of which is having a contract with the federal government to operate detention centers for unaccompanied migrant children. And this is the division that is the target of our community pressure.
Yeah, though while we have hit the streets and been communicating with people throughout the Chicagoland area, we've come into other stories about how their housing branch, the majority of their houses that are infected with like bed bugs, or, you know, they have issues with their plumbing, etc. So they're also slumlords. They also have another branch that supposedly helps people when you are decarcerated come out into society. So hypocrisy from the beginning.
I saw some people on the right, or even just liberals or trolls, say that after the May Day protests, was saying that, oh, Heartland Alliance has gotten all these awards and kind of they have this reputation in the community for, I don't know, being this great nonprofit. How dare people say anything bad about them? I'm just curious your response to that.
Well, for many of the years that Heartland won these awards, their detention centers were secret. The locations were not publicly available and nobody knew in the public that they were operating these detention centers. That truth can't be ignored by any sort of recognition given to them by the philanthropic world of Chicago.
Yeah.
And I don't think we really have, just to say that because of the secrecy around these centers for so long, now is the process of exposing all of this stuff that has been behind the surface the whole time in this organization, and to finally have public discourse about it that is not reflected in whatever social clout they've been accumulating over the years.
Yeah, also I'd like to add that, we need to also, like Lynn was saying, many of this was secret and has come to light within the past 3 years. So we also need to see who are the common factors in the system of Chicago and Illinois. So right now, their CEO, Evelyn Diaz, she was also a part of the cover-up of, I'm sure everybody's familiar with, 16 Shots and a Cover-Up. Evelyn is also a part of the cover-up of the detaining of children. We had at one point around 400 kids. And so these kids were invisible. And when we did start to come out and share information about in our backyard, we had these baby jails. A lot of people came to the idea of, oh, but they can be human trafficked. But actually, the fact is they were being human trafficked. They are being humanly trafficked.
How are people organizing against it in your area?
We've been lucky enough. Many of us have been organizing together for years, always under the guise of solidarity and anti-detention, the Polimigra against Polimigra, and also against femicides, etc. So we've built up knowledge and friendships with other organizers, and so that kind of made it a bit easier. We've had access to wonderful groups like GDC, but when we started to hit the streets, we started organizing out of a place called El Boulevard, which is a place, it's outside anti-gentrification space that started because of wanted to be, it's a public park that was trying to be privatized, and so the whole idea of, you know, you build it, people will come and organize. And so benches were built, and we started to organize there against the Polimigra. And again, we've been able to flow with other folks, and like Rosa Negra, and individuals that have been in the streets for years. And so it was just like a call that people heard and came. And unfortunately, not the popular organizations that are well known and have budgets were part of our initial crew, or even one of our latest crews of solidarity demos, but we've been able to amass many, many different supporters.
Yeah, and I think the kind of work that we've been focusing on with our capacity of these different relationships that have been cultivated through many different circles, just to simplify, is kind of two-pronged. At least that's how I think of it in my mind, as kind of public outreach and popular education, of doing teach-ins and workshops and trying to break the silence and the secrecy that is around the system of detention of unaccompanied migrant children. So that's kind of one focus. And then another focus is putting direct pressure on Heartland Alliance, through demonstrations, direct actions, disrupting their recruiting, their fundraising, and going to the actual detention centers and doing, sing-ins, chant-ins, communicating directly with the children who are incarcerated. So those are kind of, I mean, that's an oversimplification, but those are kind of the two directions, main directions that I, see the pressure going.
Yeah, we've tried to follow them at every step possible. And of course, we've been able to have the help of whistleblowers, though many more are now coming out. Like Lynn said, at every opportunity, you know, it's like Heartland's going to be at this place, whether it's the day before, the day of. We tried to ask people to come up and show up and shame them, call them out, but always speaking the truth and, you know, making a presence known. And so that this way they can put their mask on. And a lot of times, like the most recent demo, which was at a vacant baby shelter that was been around for years, they're claiming very falsely that there were children there. It was empty. And so, you know, whose streets are streets. So hence how we became that beautiful video.
And speaking of whistleblowers, there is a report on It's Going Down, if you want to read it, of somebody that worked there and then talked about their experiences. It's been also republished on Truth Out. If you want to read it, we'll definitely link it to the show notes for this podcast. But you talked about on May Day how the building was vacant. Our understanding is that one of the reasons it was vacant is because of the spread of COVID-19 in Heartland Alliance facilities. I'm curious if you can talk about that. What's the extent of the virus spreading in its facilities, and who is it impacting there?
I think with this particular building, it was twofold. That the main reason for this building being empty started even before the crisis started to happen, that it was shut down initially for renovation. And part of that then has been that the number of children being incarcerated is decreasing. Heartland's facilities are operating way under capacity because no new children are being brought into the system. The Trump administration is using the CDC's emergency powers to just deport all children who would otherwise be put into these jails. And so as Heartland has slowly been releasing the children who were already in its detention facilities, no new kids are coming in. And so the emptiness of Heartland's facilities, some of them are just because they're operating way under capacity. But this particular building, on Morse was also, the information we were receiving was coming even before some of that process, that it was a decision by Heartland, to renovate that building.
Yeah, and I think we should also be very skeptical, because if history has told us one thing, is that we do not have to believe, and we should not believe whatever mass media or whatever non-for-profits, and especially whatever Heartland or the Archdiocese, because the Archdiocese is also a big key player in at least the Chicagoland area. Up around February, we were supposed to have throughout the United States between 160 and 180 baby jails. We were lucky enough to have, from what we know of, 7 left. And there was a pop-up one in August that was another one that was supposed to be coming up, but that has arisen, though we do not know where. And so Heartland Alliance, like Lynn was saying, they had their contract renewed in the beginning of this year. They had the choice whether to renew or not, and they decided to renew. So the children that have been taken out of these buildings, we're not sure if they've been deported, if they've been moved. Because again, this is not justice. These buildings were not shut down because Heartland Alliance had a soul, nor Evelyn Diaz or David or Boca Negra. None of them have consciences. So we need to understand that we need to find where the children were moved. Were they reunited with their families, like where they should have been in the first place, and meaning en route where they were, not deported? So there's a lot more work that needs to be done. It's not over yet.
Yeah. And just to give an update on at least the most current information that we have about how many children are currently in Heartland's facilities, prior to April 24th, there were, to our knowledge, 69 children who had not yet been released, 42 of which had confirmed COVID cases. On April 24th, there was a new ruling in an ongoing court case nationally about kind of emergency release of the kids who are detained, and the judge made a final ruling that requires these detention facilities to expedite the release of the children to the best of their abilities. It's not as complete or as, it's not a particularly liberatory ruling. There's a lot of caveats and a lot of nuance. But after that ruling, Heartland released, to our knowledge, another 33 children from those 69. And that was a little while ago, so they may have released even more. But the population is slowly dwindling. But again, not because Heartland is taking conscientious actions, but because, you know, people are forcing their hand. Because their incentive is to detain the children as long as possible. They have a lot of leeway in their administrative capacities to expedite the cases of children. You know, they could have been releasing the kids faster. They didn't have to just have their hand forced by a court. But it's to their benefit. They profit more the longer that they detain each child.
In the expose that was published, they lay that out, just really how difficult it is for people to get their kids back, and just kind of how bureaucratic and how much red tape there is, and just how long the process takes and how expensive it is too. I think that was one of the things that really stood out for me, is just how many hoops they have to go through and how much money it costs. And like you said, it's designed to keep the kids in that system for as long as possible so they can continue to profit. But you're saying that the kids that are exit out of the system, they're going back with their families.
We're not sure. Some probably are. Some never are reunited with their families. Some are other sponsors. Sponsor is the word that the government uses for whoever takes custody of the child after detention. And some kids are kind of stolen from their families, and their sponsors are part of the American foster care system. A small minority of children actually don't have family in the United States, but again, this is somewhere between less than 10% of the kids who don't have family to be their quote unquote sponsors. But also the children are being put under deportation proceedings. The quote unquote sponsor is supposed to be who they stay with to await their asylum trial, because most of these children do qualify to apply for asylum. But this is one of the things that we don't know, is in the COVID landscape, with all of the, you know, the new emergency powers that are being mobilized, if these children, once they're released to a sponsor, are actually being deported much faster. That's, again, like Pura was saying before, we still have a lot of knowledge that we're lacking about what is actually happening to these kids even after they're released from Heartland.
Yeah, before COVID-19, as I stated before, it was a cat and mouse game. The children were being held for ransom. The more the child acted like a child, upset or resist, they would be medicated, and the children would have to stay there longer, which would be beneficial for Heartland, and or the Archdiocese, because they had paid daily. What's happening now is that the children have been either shuffled to another place, another system, and what we all are hoping for is that they're being reunified with their families where they should have been in the first place. So this is not the end of the story, and of course this is no way anywhere near a fairy tale. We need to find more information, and we need to get down to the rest of the story, because again, these people are big parties in a game that, unfortunately, we are winning in small pieces.
Well, that kind of brings us to our next question, is how has Heartland Alliance responded to people mobilizing against them? We'll talk about May Day specifically in the next question, but I'm just curious in general, how have they responded to either Little Village Solidarity Network or just the continuous campaign against them in general?
Well, Heartland Alliance from the beginning has tried to stick with the narrative of them being a shelter and them being helping. And but see through their positive light, the system has been going on for 20 years plus, and Heartland Alliance, from the beginning, we've had whistleblowers, and we've been able to see that their stories are just a public persona to help continue their money making. They're profiting off the lives of immigrant children, children that have been re-traumatized many times. And they could be using their legal power. They can be using their voice in helping reunify the families. But what they're doing instead is they're the middle party in between the families, in between the children. And if you ask any child, they want to be with their family. And Heartland Alliance is just thinking about their coffers and more money. Now even Lightfoot, which is our mayor, has hired Evelyn Diaz. And so we can see how far back this is, this is reaching, because also Pritzker, which is our governor, and his family, the Pritzker family, has been sending big money to Heartland Alliance to help them save the children.
Yeah, I think Heartland's response has been twofold, which is that they're kind of going full on PR. You know, they release statements you know, to defend themselves and to reinforce the glossy brochure version of what they do, which is a false veneer. And I think they are trying to retreat further and further into these powerful connections that they have that are the basis of their social capital, because on the ground, actually, they are getting less and less support. Their own health division split off. The NIJC, which is the organization that provides legal counsel to the kids inside, they moved their headquarters out of Heartland Alliance. Public support for them is dwindling. They are having trouble getting people to work for them. And we are so successful at kind of shaming them away from recruitment fairs. You know, as soon as we show up, within 20, 30 minutes, they leave because we are saying the truth and they actually don't have, you know, much ground to stand on. And so it's a strange combination, I think, of them trying to fall back on their most powerful connections while kind of more grassroots or just like common support for them is slowly crumbling.
Well, the next question is your thoughts on May Day, the action that happened there. And I'm just kind of curious, you know, there's been a lot of dumb stuff that's been said on the internet, of course. There's been an attempt by some, I think, to paint this as like some sort of like violent event, even though people basically were outside of a vacant building and some graffiti slogans were written on a vacant building. But people have tried to paint it, you know, this especially on the right, but also some liberals too, as sort of just some like violent event or something. Or I've also seen kind of the narrative that like people were scaring children somehow. I don't know. I'm just kind of curious if you wanted to push back or say anything about some of these comments that have been made.
Well, as we've already stated, it's a misconception purposefully spread by Heartland, who are simply lying through their teeth, that there were children in the particular building that was graffitied and had the banner drop. So the claim that that action terrorized children inside is pure propaganda. And it's not the first time that they have falsely claimed that people's actions have terrorized the children. That's something that's their fallback argument to demonize people who are showing up at the detention facilities. And even when we've shown up at facilities where there have been children, which those actions have largely looked different. They've been more based in kind of singing and chanting and making noise and communicating directly with the children who show up at the windows and dance or wave at us or hold up signs and try to communicate with us. Even those actions, they have claimed that we are terrorizing the children. And thankfully, again, because of testimonies, like the testimony of the young man who heard our noise demonstrations, and contacted us afterwards to give testimony. You know, he said so strongly that the kids are not scared. They know why we're there. They know that we are there for solidarity and for their liberation. And it's the staff that we scare, not the kids. But again, that particular building on May Day was empty. And regardless of, you know, what, especially liberals in Rogers Park might have their feathers ruffled by whatever tactics, you know, were used, it is a blatant lie that there were children in that facility that were terrorized.
So let me start with, Rogers Park has been wonderfully supportive. There is a Rogers Park Solidarity Network, and they did arise after the baby jail knowledge, and they have been able to work wonderfully with us, and we've had a couple different marches. Besides, we've shown up, there's two baby jails there in Rogers Park. And so the majority of people that were there on May Day were neighbors. The majority of people that were there have been working with us to collapse the idea and the physical presence of baby jails in the Chicagoland. And so when we showed up, this was a march from one baby jail to the other. We actually started in a park where the children used to be able to play because their facility, their baby jail, did not have a sufficient backyard. So every step that we took with the knowledge that, you know, we are showing an outside presence and not in our name and not in our streets, not in our neighborhoods. Of course, you know, we also have to acknowledge these are stolen lands and stolen children. And so when we showed up at this vacant home, it's a representation of we're taking back and we are not going to let this happen any further. And so, though there was art drawn on the building and though, you know, there were people that were there, and there was someone on the roof dancing and did a beautiful banner, was able to drop the banner. The only violence that happened was when the police put a bag over that person's head. And when the police violence against the demonstrators outside and were screaming at the people telling us to back up, we're screaming at people saying that, you know, we should not be here. But neither do they ever share that quote-unquote authority and their power against holding children hostage. These children are our little brothers and sisters. These children, again, are in the system not just because of Trump, but because of Obama and even farther back. These children are here in a way to put us in our place. You know, these are our lands, and these children have been held hostage for money, and they're a tool to scare us. They're a tool to separate us, to weaken us. And so all of this is just a part of propaganda.
I got sober like a man drowning, like a fish breathing, like Dracula sunbathing, in a place where the ground itself will stab you, the land itself will cut you, it will kill you if it's able. I arrived so certain I was ready, but nowadays I think there is no hurry to return to the anarchism of the worms, without God or master there, 6 feet underneath the earth. The anarchy of dirt. I keep living like a crosswire, like sabotage, like a lock glued shut. The ones like us seek each other like a brick finds glass, like a fascist meets a grave, like sharks of blood. We gather what we can of shattered selves and face each other. I'll let the
darkness speak for me when my bones won't listen till I return to the communism of the worms with that god or master there 6 feet underneath the earth. The commune of the dirt. I sleep at night like a flaming tire, like city traffic blocked, like bottles at police. I wake up and tell myself, live like you mean it. I don't know the stakes I play, but they're worth everything to me. And I know that you're always tired, comrade. Just hold on a bit longer, and I promise that we'll
I wanted to ask now, you know, it's 2020, we're going to be in full election spectacle. You know, we already are, I guess, in many ways. I'm just curious, you know, you all are going so hard. There's groups like Never Again, which have been continuously organizing. There's been a wave of action post-COVID to get people released from ICE detention. I'm just curious, you know, as you see it, you know, kind of like, where's the struggle at against ICE, against people in detention centers, and kind of like, where do you think it needs to go, or where do you see it going just in the current terrain?
I think many of us were born in the struggle. You know, many of us have always had this quote unquote rebellious heart, and the whole idea of authority and masters have not sat good with us. And I can speak personally for myself and many of us around us that we have been in this fight not just for ourselves, but because this is injustice. And so, we welcome everyone that has recently started to support, but we need to know that, you know, again, just like the baby jails, this is not over, and we will not stop. We can't, because it's our survival also. In the next upcoming elections, Biden is just as evil as Trump. Biden and Obama helped develop the newer systems that we're under. And we, though some of us have not been too happy with the system of voting, I think the majority of us, we would have rather fought against Bernie Sanders' policies. And we need to, how do you say, not just not give up, but we cannot accept any little, you know, like with the COVID-19 stuff. Oh, they're letting people out. Some people are getting out. No, the system is in place to profit off of us since even before plantation time. And the people that we've been working with, GDC and IWOC and Rosa Negra and these other groups, we all have the same system of beliefs that, you know, we deserve dignity, and dignity by no means is a threat of imprisonment. Dignity or respect or love is by no means weighing power over us. And we have to choose between, you know, working to survive, working to stay out of these, the prison industrial complex / facilities. And this is what we've been doing from day one, from our ancestors, we've been working till we die so that we can survive, but now we are surviving together, and that's the only way we're going to flourish. So the whole idea of the selection cycle, it's just giving us more more flames to fight against.
Yeah, I really agree with everything that Pura is saying. I think, you know, zooming out, all of this is in context of hundreds of years of struggle against colonization, against genocide, and there's nothing new about Biden. There's nothing, you know, the seeming strangeness of the 2020 election cycle in this larger context is really just old news. But zooming in, I think one thing that I can just speak for myself personally is how people who have either been born in this struggle or have joined this struggle can articulate that we're in a bit of a bleak catch-22 right now, in my personal opinion, between the children who are being still detained and are being clearly exposed to COVID, because that's what prisons are now. They're death traps and disease traps. And that the administration's solution to that, like I was saying before, is mass deportation. So the kind of the two systems that are operating right now, and being used to justify one another are disease trap detention and deportation. So, exploitation and exposure. So how do the people who are resisting this articulate a future that involves neither? We don't want the children to be put into these prisons, but we don't want them to be deported either. And how do we articulate a future where neither of those are the options? And I think that to me feels like, again, just zooming in on this particular moment, kind of a struggle for moving forward.
Yeah, we need to collaborate on every point. In every disaster in this pandemic, what the majority of folks have learned is that mutual aid groups, which are groups not necessarily built by NGOs or any corporations, it's by the people working for free because we believe in our communities. And so just like these struggles against Heartland Alliance and the Archdiocese, this war is being survived by those of us that are coming together. And so we need to continue to collaborate, and we need to continue to understand that everything is attached. You know, we work also against, Amazon. You know, they're a part of the detention system also. You know, we need to support the Amazon workers. You know, every worker is essential. You know, those that receive a paycheck, those that are not, every person is essential. And so at every scale, grand or small, everything is attached. You know, missing and murdered Indigenous women, you know, why is this happening? You know, why is the rate of police violence? Why, you know, is gentrification so abhorred in our communities? All of this is attached, and everyone needs to understand that, you know, one is another, how do you say, it's another part of this monstrous structure, the system that, you know, a very small percentage is gaining. And it hasn't been us, and it will not be us. The only way we gain is by our community, and is by surviving and laughing and loving.
Where do you see the campaign against Heartland Alliance going next? And also, if people want to follow what local groups in the area are doing, how can they do so?
The way to follow us, we're on Facebook. We have a website. And we're also, again, in this moment, especially as many of us are more isolated or at home, we're definitely trying to do as much outreach with the media, or just presence for media that, you know, relationships that we trust to help spread the word. So hopefully, you know, our digital presence is easy to follow these days. Where we see the campaign against Heartland going next, I think one thing that we've been discussing is, you know, in this time of COVID, we've been super, super focused on hitting the streets in a safe way, and pressuring Heartland to release the kids as quickly as possible, and haven't been doing as much of the kind of community outreach, public education, stuff like that. So I think that's one thing that we're considering is doing some sort of digital teach-in, and collaborating with other groups that are doing abolition work during this pandemic, to collaborate on a teach-in like that, to kind of put some energy towards that as well and discuss kind of the unique factors that will shape how we collectively continue. And then also just finding ways to keep the pressure up.
Yeah. And again, the quote unquote campaign against Heartland, or Heartless Alliance, we need to not necessarily follow their lead, but we are trying to, discover where the kids have been placed. And, you know, at times like this, we've had other moments when, you know, society has been in more or less in the middle, has been telling us, like, you know, our tactics, are scaring the kids, or, you know, we're going about this the wrong way. But then we've run into people like what Hunden mentioned, Jose has, been able to burn our embers brighter and tell us that, you know, we have given him hope, but he has also given us hope in the struggle that, you know, we are going about it the right way. You know, the kids know that there are people on the outside. And so though we do not know where the kids that remain in Chicago besides the Brownsville location, we are still waiting, for more signs and not necessarily, you know, signs from the gods, but, we're taking this step by step, though, we have a bigger group than we had in the beginning, which gives us more energy and more brains and more hearts. And so, you know, Heartland is also a part of, bigger struggle. You know, again, the archdiocese is also participatory, and who knows where else this takes us. So, besides all the other projects that we are working on, you know, we will continue forward. Again, people are working at their capacity, which is different. And so sometimes, you know, people can say, you know, we're supposed to be in quarantine. You know, we expect everyone to work at their capacity, and we're always asking, you know, how can we help you? Because it's not just about, you know, you coming out again, Heartland. It's not just about, you participating in an event or an action that we have started. You know, we're always like, okay, how can, you know, we help you in your daily life? How can we assist you with food, or, you know, where can we connect you? And so, you know, when people do show up, you know, we make sure people have masks. we remind people that, you know, you should be at least 6 feet apart. And so it's not just about the struggle. It's about, surviving all of our struggles. And so I think that's really important that, you know, we don't work on just one specific, item in life, and we do work with other groups, and without the other groups, we, you know, we are mighty though, with our contingent of allies. We've been able to conquer many different struggles, and so I think the people that we've been organizing with are equally poignant in this. And I just wanted to give, you know, a shout out to everyone that has been faithful in the abolition movement, and yeah, have been also working hard. Yeah, so like GDC and IWOC and Rogers Park Solidarity Network and Rosa Negra, and Lynn, can you think of more? Sorry, I'm
yeah, and there are so many actions being taken that aren't even because of being an organization or anything like that, but just because we're neighbors or just because we're in the struggle together, especially during this particular time. So just wanting to uplift all of the actions, big or small, that we are taking in solidarity and in revolution with one another, during this time. And hopefully that those relationships, as they're strengthened, through the trust that we build through these actions, that those will continue and those will, you know, flourish into good things moving forward.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us and follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.